everybody, this is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board, where politics and sports collide. And I am here to bring it all to you. I've got a hell of a show for you today, people. Too many topics to list. But before we get right into it, do not forget you can find this podcast, Points on the Board, at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora, under the handle Grumblings Media. Do not forget to subscribe. So, my friends, let us get down right to it. Jonathan Martin's admission and Mike Florio's defense. Former Miami Dolphins offensive lineman Jonathan Martin, well, he's publicly admitted that the widely publicized bully gate he allegedly experienced from teammate Richie Incognito was not as he initially portrayed it. He stated, quote, "I never believed for a second I was being bullied." He clarified his stance that's over a decade old after the incident that we now know as Bullygate. Look, this admission, it sparked a significant reevaluation of the events. This happened back in 2013. For those of you wondering, what the hell is he talking about? He previously claimed to be bullied, and it affected the careers of him, Pouncey, and Richie Incognito. And Richie Incognito, boy, he's not a saint. He's actually a bad guy. However, Jonathan Martin, my first issue was like, man, this is a big boy. You know? He's like 6'5", I want to say 6'5", 312 pounds. How the hell does somebody like that get bullied? But he was not mentally strong. He was a weak kid mentally. And that's because he was a mama's boy. Martin has clarified that the narrative of him being bullied was because of his mother coming out. He stated, quote, "I had a situation with my teammates that I wasn't super happy about, but my mother had her own read on the situation. I hadn't even told my coaches, hadn't told anyone." Mama Sam was one who initially characterized the situation as bullying, and from there it became Bullygate. And as the media is very leftist, very anti-white when this happened, Richie Incognito is white, and he deserves some of the hammering he got. Boy, that voice message he left was very racist, but from what Pouncey said, that's how they kind of talk to one another. So I don't know what to think, but I do know this. Football players are an elite-level athlete, and they're all alpha males. I'm not defending it. I'm just telling you how that world is. That used to be my world, and obviously not as a player, but as somebody who covered it. So obviously that perspective gained traction in the media, and it shaped public opinion and the NFL's perception of what they needed to do. How does Mike Florio come into this? Well, look, I knew Mike Florio coming up. Mike Florio, he's from Pro Football Talk now. He's defended his original reporting on the Martin Incognito situation despite this new revelation. See, Florio was all about, we got to kill Incognito. Not kill literally, but metaphorically. He wanted to kill him. Wanted to kill that career. Wanted to destroy him. Wanted to send him to the dogs. Let me tell you a little bit about Mike Florio. There was an email. There was this old NFL beat reporter, knew everything about the NFL, Lenny Pasquarelli. I can't remember. But there was an email he sent to my partner and demeaned him, called him names. So Mike Florio is the last one to have sat there and jumped on his soapbox, but that's what he always does. I've known of him since his NFL talk days, where NFL talk or Pro Football Talk at the time would sit there and steal stories, or they would sit there and take a press release. Our insiders are telling us. Florio's a hypocrite. You know, that's my opinion. You know, I mean, he's way above my pay grade now. He's earned it where he's gotten, but he stepped on a lot of people to get there. So Florio argues, even though this came out where he says, "I was not bullied," Florio argues that there's a nuance to this that seems to be lost on many. Sadly, he is partially right, but not in how he's using it to defend himself. He's saying that even if Martin didn't feel like he was being bullied, the behavior documented in the NFL's investigation, including the texts and voicemails, could still be considered inappropriate. He's right. They were completely inappropriate. But that doesn't take away from the fact Florio ran with a story to destroy somebody's career. Obviously, there's been pushback. He's not the only one. Adam Schefter. Let me tell you a little bit about Adam Schefter. I was in the insider game. I came up with Kaplan, with Glazer. I wasn't an insider, but some people saw me. I just had a page called Hot Off the Wire. You see how the player news profiles are? When you go to a website, you see player news. You're welcome. My company and I and RotoWire at about the time, we came out with the same player news. We just dominated the market. RotoWire couldn't sniff our jocks. That's how good we were. And I could have parlayed that into being an insider, but I kind of was building a company, not my brand, which today I'm like, maybe I should have. But anyway, my point is Adam Schefter's not truly the insider like a Jay Glazer, like one of these individuals who has to work and build his contact base. When you call somebody and say, hey, Adam Schefter from the NFL Network or Adam Schefter from ESPN, they're going to pick up. Jay Glazer, for example, hey, had to build these contacts, had to build these relationships. So Adam Schefter is not who you want, who he wants you to think he is as a true blue insider. The name ESPN carries everything in getting phone calls back and creating those relationships. They're creating relationships not because of Schefter, but because of ESPN. Now, Schefter was the same way on his high horse. What's he do? He just points to the article that this came out. It was an ESPN article, I believe. And he's kind of like, it's in his rearview mirror. But what else can he do? What else can he do? These are bad people, in my opinion. So what about Incognito? Well, he directly called out Schefter and Florio. You tried to ruin my life over this bull bleep. You know, so Schefter did acknowledge the new information. However, he smartly chose not to engage. Look, at the end of the day, these are alpha males. The truth of the matter is Jonathan Martin may be an uber nice guy, but he's a mama's boy. He was weak. He was suicidal. You know, so how his mom tried to turn it around from the fact she had a suicidal young son who she should have been focused on taking care of him, and building his mental acuity up in terms of strength, she chose to literally denigrate a human being. The problem is Incognito had a very racist phone message he left. And again, Pouncey said, hey, that's how we talk. So I don't know what to think. I'm not on anybody's side, but I just do know this is Jonathan Martin was weak-minded. He had the physical talent, but did not have the mental capacity, and thus his career in the NFL did not last long. And I'm not knocking him. I'm just stating it how it went down. He's recovered. He's on his way to his third degree, so God bless him. But these two individuals are scum. Why? Because they're not news journalists. They're just gossipers is what they are. Breaking news. No, you're just repeating what somebody tells you, Florio, or what somebody tells you, Schefter. I know I was in that industry. All right, moving on. Trevor Lawrence clarifies trade rumors and embraces the new Jaguars leadership. So let's get down to it. There was a phone call made by the Steelers to the Jaguars regarding the potential opportunity of being able to trade for Lawrence. If I'm correct, the Steelers now have like the second largest cap deficit, meaning they've got a lot of money. Well, look, Lawrence firmly rejected it. He said, look, I have a no trade clause in my contract. And he says he would have exercised it. You know, he's happy where he's at in terms of being in Jacksonville. He confirmed that both his agent and the new head coach, Liam Cohen, they reassured him that there was no substance to the trade rumors. You know, so he just signed a 5-year extension that he did not deserve. Look, I like Lawrence. I'm rooting for him. Nice guy, great role model. Good person to have as the face of the NFL, but he can't sniff Patrick Mahomes' jock. He can't sniff Jalen Hurts' jock. And this guy got this massive contract, which he did not deserve. Now, granted, he has a crappy team around him, but he has shown nothing of the magic we saw when he was at Clemson. So, for those wondering if the Steelers have a shot, no. He's going to stay in Jacksonville. All right. Let us move on. The Chiefs set strict deadlines for Travis Kelce's retirement decision. They set a deadline for Travis Kelce's retirement decision. So, look, the Kansas City Chiefs, they gone to Kelce and said, look, we need to know right around March 14th whether you're going to play or not, or if you are going to retire. And this story is from The Athletic. And I apologize. The Trevor Lawrence story was from The Athletic as well. And the Jonathan Martin story was from Outkick and various X posts where I saw the quotes, et cetera, et cetera. I need to be fully transparent in the sense I want to give these companies their due in this day and age where people steal information or claim exclusive when they're not. So this is from The Athletic. And look, a quick plug for The Athletic. I get nothing out of this. In fact, most of the reporters are leftists, but they don't put that in their, well, for the most part, stays out. They are a great old school news source. So subscribe to them. Worth every penny. So they told Travis Kelce, hey, we need to know right around March 14th. And it coincides with the NFL dates, including the start of free agency, which is March 10th. And there's a roster bonus of $11.5 million due to Kelce on the 15th. So obviously the timing is critical. They need to plan their offseason strategy and manage the salary cap. And they're very tight up at the cusp with about $5.38 million free. So if Kelce retires, the team wants to avoid paying the bonus. And that allows them to redirect that money elsewhere in the pursuit of free agency. Now, Kelce is 35. He's had a legendary career. But he obviously shows signs of decline in 2024. His career low stats of 823 receiving yards and only 3 touchdowns. His performance in the Super Bowl was abysmal. The Eagles beat him 40-22. I love saying that. Why? Because the injury report for the Chiefs said referees inactive. Anyway, he only had 4 catches for 39 yards on there. So on his New Heights podcast, he did sit there and say, look, the body's taking a beating. You have to remember, when dynasties come, they're playing into the playoffs. So they have another month of league play. That accumulates. And that tends to wear on older players' body in terms of recovery time. So we'll wait and see. I have no clue what he's going to do. If I had to put money on it, I'd say he plays the season for that $11.5 million. Deebo Samuel's trade permission and contract details. Again, another story from The Athletic. Look, the San Francisco 49ers are allowing Deebo Samuel and his agent to seek a trade partner. Excuse me. You know, Samuel, look, at the exit meeting, Samuel said, hey, I want to trade. Kind of leaves me scratching my head. The Niners, you know, you always go through back and forth because these players are greedy in terms of how much they ask for. So they have to find a balance. But they took care of him. You know, now let's be honest. You're not going to like hearing this, Deebo fans. But he recorded his lowest yardage and touchdown total since 2020. He was publicly frustrated by his role in the offense. But, dude, you got to create separation. You got to get open. And getting open once and creating separation out of a handful of plays or every handful of plays is not cutting. You have to do it every play. And you look at some of the film, you kind of question that. Maybe that was because of his frustration. But that's not an elite player's mentality. That's not Tom Brady, Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, Pete Rose type mentality. So what's the impact on the 49ers? Well, look, that's going to hurt. Why? Because Brandon Ayuk is coming back from an ACL injury. Ricky Pearsall is only in his second season. He's still learning the offense, gelling with the team. Remember, he didn't join the team till late because he got shot. So it's the ACL injury from Ayuk. That's why I don't give a – I mean, the receivers are made by the quarterback. You got too many receivers. You're not going to be able to pay them all. Ayuk. Deebo, and if Pearsall does as well as they did, which is that West Coast offense, Kyle Shanahan looks for that quarterback who can hit those receivers in stride, the accuracy. That's always going to bump a receiver's numbers up, as we've seen with the Niners. So, Debo signed a 3-year, $71.6 million contract, I want to say in 2022. Signing bonus of $24 million, $58 million guaranteed, an average salary of $23.8 million. This is from SpotTrack. This coming year, he's going to earn a base salary of $1.2 million, signing bonus of $15 million, and a workout bonus of $200,000. He's going to carry a cap hit of $15.8 million and a dead cap value of $31 million. So I don't know how a trade's going to work out. But here's my problem is since he signed that contract from 2022, 23 through 24, his last three seasons, average 14 games, 17-game season, you're paying him big dollars. Game started 14, receptions, 56 receptions for 730 yards. That's not, he's not earning his pay, 13.1 yards per average, on average, four touchdowns, but he rushes about 40 attempts a year, only 200 yards, 4.9 yards rushing, three TDs, two fumbles, one loss on average. Those aren't elite numbers, but he's got elite pay. And I think the 49ers saw the writing on the wall. They're like, hey, we overpaid this guy. He may have to take a pay cut to go elsewhere, restructure that deal. I'm like, if I'm the Niners, I let him walk. Former Panthers respond to Cam Newton's losers comment from The Athletic and X, where I saw the video. Look, there's backlash from former teammates on Cam Newton. Cam Newton's comments on the Travis Hunter show, he labeled the 2010 Carolina Panthers losers. And that's obviously sparked significant backlash from former teammates. You know, he was talking about, hey, I was drafted to a team that was losers. They were more concerned with where their vacations were going, which is truly a disservice to the team and his teammates. Steve Smith, Charles Johnson, and Captain Moon-Erlin. They were part of the 214 team that year. And they publicly criticized him, and rightfully so. You know, some suggest that Newton's remarks were an attempt to remain relevant. Moon-Erlin said that in the media landscape, and I agree. Johnson also argued they had some of the best performances during that season. Moon-Erlin noted he had a career high in interceptions, and Johnson also had a strong year. Newton's comments were part of a broader discussion on the expectations and challenges of being a top draft pick. And to him, he's like, look, it was a culture shock. Culture shock. That's when he made a comment about players more focused on offseason vacations than winning. Jordan Gross defended the team's effort. He acknowledged the season was tough, but also pivoted for bringing in both Newton and Coach Ron Rivera, who was a defensive-minded guy when he was still relevant. Here's my take on this. Newton couldn't hit the side of a barn as a passer. He was a big kid, phenomenal legs, literally had a linebacker's body. He thrived as long as he stayed healthy. The problem was, as he got older, the Knicks caught up to him, and he never learned how to become a pocket quarterback. The defense carried him to the Super Bowl, and that's what bugs him. He'll never be, he won't ever be on Eli Manning's level, much less to talk with the GOAT, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, or any of those. And that bugs him. So he's got his insecurities make him say these things. You know, I just hope the kid matures. He's a grown man now. He had a solid career. Did not have a great career. He had a solid career. And that's what makes him bitter and insecure and why he lashes out like that. Why he has to portray himself as a bigger-than-life character. When the reality of it all was the defense carried him to the Super Bowl. He never learned how to hit the side of a barn. And he'll quickly be forgotten in a few years. But take this into account. He's one of a handful of players that got to live his career living the dream. So God bless him for that. Kellen Moore, appointed as New Orleans Saints head coach, CBS Sports. So Kellen Moore has been named the Saints' new head coach. And he's going from his offensive coordinator for the now world champion Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, he got the job immediately after the team's championship. Look, he's gone from a player to a head coach in just a decade. a little bit over a decade. I mean, that's incredible. He served as offensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys and the Los Angeles Chargers. Now, the Saints have salary cap issues. They struggled to reach the playoffs over the last few years. They're going to be in salary cap hell. See, the problem with the Saints is they carry mediocrity because of their salary cap. They try to plug a hole here, plug a hole there, thinking they can compete. They are in one of the worst divisions, if not the worst divisions in the NFC South, and they can't compete. Here's a problem for Kellen Moore. He said, we can compete. I'm like, yeah, really? Ooh. That, and he's just another whiz kid. Is he truly a leader of men? When times get tough, will they follow him? Maybe. He's got a championship ring, but I don't know. Doesn't know much about the defensive schemes. These are that. As a quarterback, he brings his intellectual capacity, but he's never coached the position, never been part of a team long enough to understand the concept of now you're a head coach, you've got two sides of the field or the cover and think about. So these whiz kids tend to flame out. Very rarely do they make it to the big game. Look how Andy Reid's dominated. Financial constraints of his roster is going to hit him worse than what he thinks. Okay. The other issue is quarterback. He praised Derek Carr, but did not name him the starter. Look, until the Saints address that salary cap, we don't know what to expect. Maybe this kid is the next whiz kid and can work his magic, and we're going to take a wait and see, but I will put my odds on until they address the salary cap, realize they need to rebuild, maybe use Derek Carr as a trading piece, New York Jets, and build off some draft picks. I just don't see them turning the corner for a few years. Moving on. So, Chip Kelly. The impact of Chip Kelly's offensive schemes on the Las Vegas Raiders. Sports Illustrated. So, Chip Kelly is now the offensive coordinator for the Las Vegas Raiders. We know that came out about a week or two ago. But I wanted to talk about it because he brings a wealth of experience from both the NFL, college football. He was also an NFL head coach. So he has all this wisdom, all this experience. This may be his moment to shine finally. You know, his scheme, it's evolved from a high-tempo spread offense that he was known for at Oregon. I think he won a national championship there too with that. Now it's a more pro-style offense. So he's evolved. He's grown. And this new approach, heck, it includes a unique pre-snap looks, frequent receiver motion that keeps the defense off balance. But he's now focusing on the outside zone run scheme. And what does that do, my friends? It emphasizes run out tackle. Can you say tight end Brock Bowers benefiting from that? He can exploit matchups. But you need a quarterback. They don't have a quarterback, but they've got Pete Carroll. They've got Chip Kelly. They've got Tom Brady there. So that will be high on their to-do list. And the reason I say those three names is they're not going to look at a Gardner Minshew and go, I can win with him. They're not going to look at an Aidan O'Connell. I can win with him. So they struggle. But I think if they get that quarterback in there, and maybe it's a Russell Wilson, maybe I'd rather see a Sam Darnold there, but if they can get somebody like that, get Sam Darnold as your franchise or Russell Wilson as your stopgap, and I don't see any of the rookie class this year even. I don't think they should even look at any of those quarterbacks. But I do think Chip Kelly is going to be a good fit there. I think he'll lead to a revitalized Raiders offense, again, if he can find a quarterback. The police blotter. Kadarius Toney arrested on serious charges. Sports Illustrated. Look, man, this guy's a free agent, Kadarius Toney. He was arrested on allegations of strangling a woman back in January. I guess it just came out into the news. Oh, yeah. Excuse me. I got something in my frog in my throat. And the reason I'm checking is like, man, this guy's been a problem child. They're saying that Toney applied enough pressure to the woman's throat to cause her to be unable to breathe.
can't breathe.
Shades of hands up. And it resulted in visible red marks on her neck and hemorrhaging in the eyes. I guess where it turns bloodshot and you know, things like that. So Tony is accused of taking the woman's phone to prevent her from calling 911. Look, this guy's facing some serious time. He was charged with aggravated assault, strangulation, and obstructing, harassing 911 calls. His bond was only set for $25,000. Well, maybe he's not going to get heavy time. So what does this mean? Look, first of all, Tony's a former first-round pick by the New York Giants in 2021. Never lived up to his pedigree to what they thought his talent was, and he's always made excuses. Went from the Giants to the Chiefs, where he did win two Super Bowls. He was briefly with the Browns before being released this past December because he just wasn't performing. But then again, in his defense, they had no quarterback. So what's this mean for his NFL career? Look, nobody can touch him with a 10-foot pole. His career is not done until after this gets settled. I mean, his career is done until after this gets settled. And if there's any two to it, no team's going to touch him because he's not a producer. Teams will overlook this type of stuff if you produce. Concerns over Anthony Davis's injury severity. Sports Illustrated again, and we are moving on here to the NBA. So, according to former Dallas Mavericks player Chandler Parsons, Anthony Davis's injury, this was last week, it might be more severe than they thought. Look, they knew about Davis's injury before his debut game and might have rushed him back into play. So this isn't pivotal news from the perspective that Davis has an injury history. And this is a significant injury that could put him out for weeks, if not months. And he is supposedly the integral piece, the culture that the GM talked about. Well, it doesn't matter how much you bring to the culture if you're not on the court. This really puts a real big dent because he thinks they can win it. I mean, him and maybe a few people around his inner circle. I'm just thinking of Doncic, Luka Doncic. He's like just laughing right now. All right, so technically he's going to miss multiple weeks, but if surgery is required, that's why I said months. Their playoffs are in jeopardy. I don't care what anybody says. They had other injuries like Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively the second. Hits it, puts their playoff chances in the grim picture for the immediate future, but we still got a lot of season to go. Let's stick with the Mavericks. The Mavericks assistant coach Daryl Armstrong faces aggravated assault charge. I don't know. Did him and Kadarius Toney call one another? I'm going to be somebody up. I'm going to be somebody up first. Daryl Armstrong, he's a 14-year NBA veteran and assistant coach for the Dallas Mavericks. He's been there since 2009. He was arrested this past week in Dallas for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. So according to a police report obtained by WFAA, I have to give credit here where it's due, the incident occurred about 3:45 a.m. on Ross Avenue. I don't know where it's at. These are my producer notes here. I'm my own producer. So Armstrong was allegedly involved in a heated argument with a woman. Come here, woman. He's accused of hitting her with a gun. Bam! And making threats to shoot her. Woo, that's some serious stuff. His bond was set at $35,000. So Armstrong's attorney, Larry Taylor, stated that they are in the early stages of investigating the incident, emphasizing Armstrong's reputation in the Dallas community. So obviously, that probably doesn't fit the culture of the GM there. So he's placed on administrative leave. Look, odds are he's going to be whacked if there's any truth to it. By whack, meaning let go from the team. What can you do? You got to let someone like that go. He's well off enough. He can. But until he's found guilty or innocent and the details come out, administrative leave is a fair thing to do here. Now, they did confirm Armstrong's involvement, but did not name him directly in their public statement, focusing on the legal process, as I just said. Let's stay on the negative side of sports. I mean, this is what Points on the Board is about. I bring you in, you know, outside the lines. shooting incident near Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl parade. This story here is from OutKick. Look, on February 14th, they had the parade, the victory parade, and that's when the shooting occurred. Right around 2:30, I guess, you know, parade was going. It was between two women, aged 20 and 27, and they were shot by a man wearing an Eagles jersey. I just laugh because it's the Eagles fans. These are the fans that threw ice snowballs at Santa. And they're the fans that when Michael Irvin went down, they're like, those are your Eagle fans. They're the ones who destroyed the city after they won the Super Bowl. They're the ones that boo Taylor Swift. Boo! These are your Eagle fans. Now, in their defense, every city tends to turn it into a nightmare. But that's going to end here in probably about 10 years. Once you get all these cams and cameras set up, the mayor's going to go enough. And he's going to use that to start identifying people, throwing them in jail and finding them, you know, because that has to come to an end. We're at a point where violence is just nonstop. People think they can get away with it. And for the most part, because of Democrats, and since the turn of the century, they have. So, the Philadelphia Police Deputy Commissioner Frank Venor is who reported that it was two women shot by a guy. So, here's the worst part. It had to do with cutting in line at a port-a-john, is what we're hearing. I don't know how true that is, but that's what we researched and found. Now, the victims, again, a 27-year-old woman shot in her left leg and a 20-year-old woman shot in the upper left thigh. And they're okay. I mean, you're at me, oh, okay, even if that's a devastating injury. It can leave scars, etc. You know? So, what's ironic about this happened last year when the Chiefs won. There was a shooting. I mean, again, the dispute involved line cutting at portable potties. Restrooms is what they said, but portable Johns. On a side note, saying Portable John's, there was a Portable John company called Here's Johnny. For all you older folks, Johnny Carson sued and won. They had to change the name. Anyway, look, you need a large police presence in these things. Maybe call in the National Guard next time because there's not enough police to cover a parade like that. But something's got to be done. Okay. I want to say a week or two ago, or last show, I talked about the halftime show. And my point was, look, Kendrick Lamar has a demographic. It's pretty much 90% black. And that's who his target market is. So if you didn't like the show and you're not black, or if you don't like hip hop, then the show wasn't for you. But there was nothing wrong with the show if that's what you enjoy. I'm not a hip hop guy. I don't knock it, to each their own. From what I understand, it was a hell of a show. I never watch the halftime shows anymore. But my point is, people don't complain about it. That's who Kendrick Lamar is. He has his audience, and that's who he was playing to. Deal with it. However, there was extreme backlash for the show for two reasons. First of all, it was in New Orleans, so some people said it should have been Lil Wayne because he has deep roots to New Orleans. And the NFL's come out and said, okay, maybe you're right. And it also did not align with the cultural identity of New Orleans. Maybe some reggae, I don't know. I don't know what Lil Wayne plays. But they've also said that moving forward, they're going to try to look at talent within the cities that the games are at. But they're also going to look at culture, you know, trying to find a balance for the global appeal with local representation. In other words, they want a Beyonce, a Rihanna, and Taylor Swift. They want something like that to sit there and cross various cultures. And that's what I would tell them as a marketer. Hey, you've got every culture from Tom, Dick, and Harry who's watching this. You got to make sure your halftime show celebrates all of that. And that's where I think they failed. But I also think this was an FU to the changing winds. And that's come, the changing winds are coming heavily from Latinos and men, male black men, you know, who want to see a change. So the NFL needs to read the tea leaves too. But I had no issues with Kendrick Lamar's show because it's like I knew who he was and what he was catering to. DOE, Department of Education, rescinds Biden guidance on NIL payments and revenue sharing. The athletic business. So I talked last week about the Title IX executive order that Trump signed. What I didn't talk about is part of this was also it rescinded a guidance issued by the Biden administration as they were walking out the door that said, you colleges, your NIL money has to be divided equally amongst male and female athletes. Now, let's be quite clear here. Nobody is going to watch women's basketball. There's a few schools where they do that, but for most part, they don't. Nobody's going to watch women, or hell, for that part, men's swim teams. You know, the softball, the baseball. It is college basketball, males, and college football, males, that brings in the multi-millions. And Biden was saying, no, you got to give the money away equally. Idiots is what they're doing. This is the NIL is changing the college sports into more professional. And how much you can bring to the table is how much NIL money you will get. So this was an unjust decision, anti-capitalistic, unfair to the men who are bringing the money in. So people are like, well, it's going to have serious implications to college sports. Yeah, it will. It's going to give the money to where it deserves to be given to. The boys who are bringing it in. Caitlin Clark is somebody that's an outlier. How many Caitlin Clarks are there versus SEC athletes, Pac-10 athletes, ACC athletes? So this settlement, this is also going to affect the settlement. There was a settlement. I'm trying to find it here in my notes, what it was called. Let's see. Where is it at in my notes? Well, I can't. Anyway, it has to do with the lawsuit that they settled with the Power Five conferences, the NCAA, to pay approximately $2.8 billion over 10 years of current and former Division I athletes who weren't able to take advantage of NIL. They're the ones who sued. They're the ones who made all this happen for the college players today. So with this removal, schools now have the flexibility to properly pay these players. Now, I know every woman's crying, unfair, unfair. Well, go get your own fans to pay you. I'll be facetious. The PGA Tour and LIV golf merger negotiations update. This is from Mirror, UK paper. So the PGA Tour is still in discussions with a Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, PIF, to finalize the merger. Now, the PGA is all riding high, thinking they have the advantage here because Trump is on their side. I've got news for you. Trump may say what he wants to say on this one, but Saudi Arabia is a major player in the next couple years that Trump has to work with and negotiate with. So they're not going to roll over and go, yes, Mr. President, we're going to do what you want us to do. No, they're going to go, we're going to negotiate. And there's a lot of issues here. There's a lot of players playing for LIV, which complicates this matter, that are great players like John Rahm, who's a Masters champion, who went to LIV. The signing bonus of about $481.5 million. You know, so they've got to deal with those players. How do you bring them back? Because some of the PGA players, I don't want him back, man. He's bad for the PGA. No, they're pissed that they got their money and they may come back. So it's kind of like, and the PGA players, my, you sold out. And then they get to come back. And that's going to happen. Mark my words. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So they are looking towards Trump as being a major mediator in all of this. Look, the PGA golf was a monopoly. I don't like golf. I'm not a golfer, you know, but the PGA golf, that was just nothing but a bad monopoly of good old boys. And I loved it when the LIV came and changed the game up. Trump doesn't like the change. Why? Like, the guy's almost 80. He's an old schooler. He is, and that's my whole point. You know, they're looking to spice the game up, juice it up, bring in younger players, not keep it so rich, so whitish. Now, these merger talks, they were supposed to have ended in 2023. Obviously, they faced delays. So again, the goal remains to unify the sport. We'll see what happens. I don't think LIV is going to roll over, nor should they. You've got to reintegrate these players and not punish them. And the PGA wants to punish them. And that's where the Saudi Arabia is going to go, We'll have to wait and see what happens. Donica Patrick criticizes Anthony Fauci on Valentine's Day. Another story from Al-K. Look, Donica Patrick has been outspoken attacking Anthony Fauci righteously. She's a former NASCAR driver, as most of us know. Pretty hot chick at the time. I don't know if she still is. I haven't seen her in a while. I'm terrible. I'm sorry. I apologize about that. Look, all women are beautiful. I'm just being facetious there. The only reason I'm saying that is because I remember her early on, you know, how that's all they talked about. But she's retired from the sport. I'm sure. I think she may be a mom right now. I don't know. But anyway, what I love about her is she's conservative. She's a prominent figure in MAGA, Make America Healthy Again. And she used Valentine's Day to publicly and righteously criticize Dr. Death, Anthony Fauci. That's my take. He's Dr. Death. She called him a criminal and a crook for his actions during the COVID-19 pandemic. He lied. 6 feet, man. That's scientific, man. That's scientific. I remember how film. Well, bro, when the brother goes, oh, I'm not going to take the shot. Well, if you take the shot, you won't catch COVID. Knowing damn well you would still catch COVID. Like Patrick, I also express strong resentment toward Fauci. He's a vile, evil excuse of a man. And the day he leaves this earth, he will have to answer for everything he's done since his AIDS debacle. And literally killing those with AIDS much faster than they would have probably naturally died with AZT. She's angry at him because of the masking, the school closures, the business shutdowns, which did nothing but help the corporations, which he knew, took away our freedoms. And she's pissed that Biden just gave him a pardon. But here's the kicker. Thank God. And this was my first take. Well, that's a federal pardon. The states can go after him. And I hope they do, and they are. I hope he spends his final few years stuck in courts and eventually goes to prison and dies in prison. He's a vile, evil man. That's my take. Patrick's comments, I think the article, and I'll kick, framed it as a parting shot on a day meant for love. Look, Donica came out for the MAGA movement. She saw what was happening. Look, the MAGA movement is about making America great again. And to the leftists out there, to my brethren Latinos, to my fellow blacks who I grew up in the South, lots of extended black family in the sense of friends, it was about making America great again economically. I understand. We all know there were issues from the 50s and 60s, and that's what inspired the civil rights movement, was how blacks were treated. But Trump was talking about economically making America great. And what did leftists do? They tried to make it about race. Let me ask you this, Black America. How has your movement gone with the Democrats helping you? Because I know. I've studied all the policies. I've seen the results, and they're abysmal. The projects were supposed to be temporary. Now they've become your guys' home. And the Democrats are happy. Me, I want to see y'all in the suburbs, living in the higher ends of cities. Projects were supposed to be temporary, and they became a permanent place, as I believe Democrats wanted it to. And I agree with Donica Patrick. Target Fauci. Don't let the world forget what he did. He's a vile, evil human being. Taylor Rooks. Career, dating rumors, and ethical challenges. So I just discovered this Taylor Rooks because I'm not big. I do not deal anymore with watching the interviews, pregame shows, or anything like that with football. I just watch it. Basketball, ugh, it's just a terrible game to watch between the palming, the walking, the Luka Doncic. You know, he thinks he gets a call. The play's still happening. He's there bitching at the referee. It's a terrible game. So I didn't really know who this Taylor Rooks is or was or is. Beautiful, beautiful woman. Like, whoa, yowza. She's a sports journalist and a broadcaster. She works as NBA host for TNT as well as contributing to Thursday Night Football and Bleacher Report. She began her career covering football and basketball and still recruiting stories for Scout.com, and obviously she still covers both. She's held positions at major networks such as Sportsnet New York, Big Ten Network, and CBS Sports Network. She's known for engaging. I don't know what she's known for. Because that's just opinion, you know. But there's rumors and speculation about her dating players. You know, the subject of numerous dating rumors involving high-profile athletes and celebrities. She keeps that on the down low, though. But Kendall Marshall, 2015, Tristan Thompson. Then there's Odell Beckham Jr., Jesse Williams, 2018 to 2019. And more recently, she's been tied to Jack Dorsey. And even more recently, Joe Burrows and CeCe Lamb. That was during Super Bowl week. Now my friend goes, man, that's a hoe. I'm like, dating somebody does not make you a hoe. That's a lot of athletes. My issue is the ethics. You know, there's issues with that. That's a conflict of interest. Her reporting is going to be influenced by her player relationships. I see this all the time. And that will undermine her ability to ask the tough, piercing questions. The tough questions they don't want to be asked. She won't do that. She wants to be their friends. I saw this when I covered the NFL. I was stunned. There were a handful of female reporters at the time, a couple that I respected tremendously. And I found out they were sleeping with the players. And it wasn't one source who told me. This was multiple sources. And I was like, oh, no wonder they don't ask tough questions. Again, this is what I'm hearing. It's just some kind of rumor. Reporting is a dead art in today's America. Dead. I don't begrudge Rooks, but I don't think you're ever going to get a serious interview with her. I don't think you're ever going to get her to break serious news in terms of something negative against these players, because that's who she's covering. I don't care who she speaks with, but she's compromised. So she'll never be a great reporter because of that. But God bless her. She's a gorgeous-looking woman who does her job in terms of bringing eyeballs to her broadcast, or I assume she does. Who knows? Stephen A. Smith, presidential ambitions from CNBC. Here's a kicker. Stephen A. Smith wants to be president. You know, he's living up. You can see him light up when they ask him about it. But he doesn't want to campaign. He says, if the people want me, I'm there for them. Look, Stephen A. Smith is a bleeding heart leftist who will pull the John Fetterman and Joe Manchin, say something more towards the middle, and conservatives are, look at him, he's a conservative. No, he's not, you idiot. He's a leftist who knows how to handle the political winds of change and say the right things. He's a masterful on-camera guy in terms of telling you what you want to hear. So he's expressed that while he would not mind being a U.S. president, he doesn't want a campaign. He wants to run a Biden-esque type campaign. He says he dislikes to the traditional aspects of political campaigning, such as shaking hands and kissing babies. But he's okay with dirty politics, because he does that in sports. He plays a race card two-thirds of the time, and then does outlandish takes. He's one-third correct. He's correct one-third of the time. Actually, he's correct two-thirds of the time, but he plays the politics, the racial game, two-thirds of the time. But he states that if he can bypass campaigning, directly engage in presidential debates, which he would not win. People are scared to challenge Stephen A. Smith because he is ESPN's flagship bearer. I guarantee you a debate would not be like that. So who knows what will become of this. He says he's looking at 2028. Dream on, brother. A recent poll, 2% of voters indicated they would support him in a Democratic primary. I guarantee you that poll was done with people who follow ESPN Sports. I just thought it was a fun story to talk about. So let's close it out with the NBA All-Star Game, criticized for excessive non-basketball content, and Kevin Hart's role. Now, this is funny because it's the final story, and I put it there purposely because, you know, it's the NBA's biggest weekend of the year in terms of bringing the fans of all kinds, a casual fan, but it's dying. They did a little better this year with the ratings. I'm going to say like 4-point-something million up from like 3-point-something million last year, but it was still a debacle. It was this past weekend that was heavily criticized for featuring very little actual basketball, like only 30 minutes worth, I guess, from what I understand. And that was added to the three-hour broadcast. So according to reports, the event was marred by numerous interruptions, including extended commercial breaks, a shooting competition, and a 20-minute tribute to the TNT crew. Look, I don't care how good a crew is. You don't waste 20 minutes because half the fans don't even care when it comes to that. And there was frustration that the broadcast prioritized non-basketball elements over the sport itself. They have a new four-team tournament format aimed to increase competitiveness. And one of the teams there were young players, not even all-stars. And then you had the stoppages. So viewers were like, why am I watching? It's not an event. Look, I tried watching the WNBA All-Star, and after a few minutes, I'm like, look, like Caitlin Clark or not, this is the ugh. Then Kevin Hart was prominent. Look, Kevin Hart's like the go-to. Again, when I was talking about Taylor Swift, Beyonce, for sporting events, Kevin Hart is beloved by everybody. So he's your go-to guy now. He relates to black players. He's beloved by white audiences. It's a perfect mix. And I'm talking to you as a marketer. Perfect selection. But I guess you're talking about he wasn't that good. Many felt that he detracted. Many felt he wasn't funny. He was given extensive airtime. And I can see that. It's overexposure. He's doing too much. Doesn't have time to really get his A game going. And it turned out that a lot of people found him unfunny and out of place. He joked about Shaq O'Neal's outfit. And that drew sharp criticism. Look, poor guy, he was in a situation he couldn't win. People were already pissed, and he just did not help. You know, it was more like comedic disruption was a term that came about. And it stalled the game. In fact, they say you contributed to one of the worst All-Star games in history. So all this boils down to the NBA's decision to prioritize entertainment over the sport. Look, I don't blame the NBA. It just didn't work. It just did not work. At the end of the day, you've got to understand the NBA is there to entertain with the All-Star game, and they obviously failed to do that this go-round. Better luck next year, but I think it is on its deathbed, the NBA All-Star and the NBA ratings. Look, it's a bad sport to watch. Adam Silver, he's no David Stern. But that said, the NBA is gaining popularity worldwide while it's diminishing in America. And the worldwide market is what they're looking at. So we'll see how all this plays out. And there you have it, my friends. I hope you enjoy this kind of like a rundown, the rude rundown. It was not officially here today, but I just had so many stories I wanted to get off my chest and talk about that it was not a deep dive. I love to deep dive into one or two topics and inform you how it works from the weeds next week. But I hope you enjoy the show. Do not forget to like and share this podcast. Do not forget to subscribe to this podcast. And you can find not only this podcast, Points on the Board, on grumblingsmedia.com, but you can also find my conservative talk, Fired Up, as well as Fired Up California. Because as California goes, supposedly the nation goes. And I also have my cultural / pop culture podcast called The Red, White, and Rude. Oh, I apologize. I said this is a rude rundown. No, it's not. That's too many podcasts. That's my Red, White, and Rude. I got to get a new name for my quick-hitting segment here for Points on the Board because I've been told by management it's kind of confusing, you know. But we'll get a new name. In fact, send me your suggestions for what I call my lightning round where I talk about topics. And I'll go from there, but that's going to be revamped here over the next week or two. But anyway, back to what I was saying, grumblingsmedia.com is where you can find Points on the Board. The Red, White, and Rude is pop culture podcast and entertainment, music, movies, etc., as well as Fired Up California. You can also find these on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. Thank you for tuning in. I am William Del Pilar. And until next week, this is Points on the Board, and I bid you adieu.